After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Game Time AM. It is dark and early. It's a little chilly this morning. We left a couple windows open. I walked downstairs. I'm like, man, it's cold. It's just like, I don't know, 48, 50 degrees here on a... Is it still Tuesday? Yeah, Tuesday.
It is just now Tuesday.
Just now Tuesday. I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there chiming in. And then Matt Davis pushing the buttons, making sure we're on the air and playing the music. Good morning, fellas.
Hi.
Good morning. Yeah. I think we're actually on the air today, awesome. As of so far.
Yeah, so we text in 855-282-8255 if you can't hear us. Wait, that wouldn't work very well. If you can hear us, text us. How's that?
You know what? I bet it would work because I bet you there is someone, like there is an angry texter guy out there somewhere who at 5 clicked over just to see, like really hoping that there was a lot of static so he could text in and be angry, right? Like, please let Mike and Mike be on 590 this morning. You know, that person exists, I promise you.
Why is the TV in the studio on CNBC?
I have a guess.
Yeah?
One of the hockey games was on CNBC last night.
Oh, it was.
So I'm guessing that whoever was watching that, it was the Anaheim game, the Anaheim-Calgary game. Somebody was on CNBC. Or actually, I know Boston and Ottawa were. So I'm guessing somebody was watching hockey in here last night.
Which is interesting. Last night there were four games in the NHL playoffs. Every single one went to overtime. So you may have gone to bed before the finals. You may have stayed up and are bleary-eyed this morning waiting for all those games to go final. So we'll do a quick recap here at the top of the show. Let's start out east. Ottawa at Boston. Ottawa wins 4-3, and Ottawa now leads the series 2-1. I could pull up the winners, but we'll go in a little bit depth after we kind of cover them all. Washington at Toronto. Uh-oh. This is trouble.
Yeah, this is one of those where everything starts to get tight.
Toronto 4-3 in overtime. Toronto now leads the series 2-1. That gasping sound coming from Washington D.C. is
It's so like I really enjoy watching the Capitals play. I hold them in high esteem.
They're
very good. They have so few weaknesses, and they just
can't.
Man, they just can't. They just can't get over that. Oh, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, they're going to need to sacrifice a live chicken or something. I don't know. There's something going on there. Did they build the arena on a like Indian burial ground or something?
It is in the middle of Chinatown, so it's possible that there's. I mean, I don't know. Some of the best Chinese restaurants I've ever eaten at in my life. Are adjacent to the Verizon Center. There's a place where you can get some duck noodle soup that I stopped at really several times on the way home from the old VC.
Sounds tasty.
It's pretty good.
So we'll talk about that series. And then Anaheim at Calgary. Oh, poor Brian Elliott.
Poor Moose.
Anaheim wins 5-4. They have a 3-0 lead.
And Calgary took a 4-1 lead in that game, by the way.
Oh.
Before they yacked up the last four.
Four straight goals there for your Anaheim Ducks. And then finally, Chicago at Nashville. Now, Chicago had a 2-0 lead in the third period.
Yes, they did.
It went to overtime. And your Nashville Predators win 3-2. They lead the series 3-0. Hey, at least Chicago got a goal. In fact, they got two goals. That whole one goal slogan for the Blackhawks, they doubled that. So.
They did. They now have at least one goal. Spirit, they now have as many goals as Joel Edmondson.
Spirit win for the Chicago Blackhawks. They scored two goals.
Yeah. Scott Powers, who writes for The Athletic in Chicago, points out that four teams have come back from a 3-0 deficit in a 7-game series in the history of the NHL. The Maple Leafs in 1942, the Islanders in 1975, the Flyers in 2010, and the Kings in 2014.
So three of them were during color television. That's good.
And I mean, and really, Like 2.5, because I don't, I mean, did everyone have color TV in 1975?
Vast majority.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. That's a long time before I existed. So
I was on this planet. Let's break that down a little bit further. So Dennis Rasmussen, he's a Chicago Blackhawk. Did you know that?
I did know that.
I did not. He scored his first goal of the playoffs. It was the first goal of any of the Blackhawks in the playoffs. And then a little fellow named Patrick Kane from Duncan Keith and Johnny Taves scored also in the second period, both of those coming in the second period. Then Philip Forsberg said, you know, enough of this noise, and he scored, 4:24 into the third period, and then he scored again 14 minutes into the third period. And then Kevin Fiala, his second goal of the playoffs, from James Neal and Jamrock. I forget his first name.
Cali Yarncroak.
Yeah, exactly. Jamrock.
Yes, Jamrock.
And that was 16:44 into overtime. So they really played with Chicago Blackhawks' emotions. And that game started at 8:45.
Right.
Did you see who sang the national anthem?
Mrs. Mike Fisher.
Otherwise known as Carrie Underwood.
Yes, indeed.
She was kind of a special unannounced guest there, wearing her husband's jersey.
She is one of two hockey wives that have always, I've never understood. Her, and they're divorced now, but remember Mike Comrie?
Uh-huh.
Remember who he was married to?
Was that Duff?
Hillary Duff.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, because with them, there was an incident with a balcony and a telephoto lens.
After
the engagement ring was provided. Yeah, she was very grateful.
Nice ring. Let me repay that.
Yeah.
It was, I'm sure, yeah. So, man, are there people on the ledge in Chicago, or do they not care?
I don't know. Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times tweeted last night that the Blackhawks are 13-5 in elimination games under Joel Quenneville, 9-2 since being knocked out by the Coyotes in 2012. So they've only lost two elimination games since 2012.
But some of those are Game 7 games.
Yes.
Where they were also eliminating someone else.
I mean, that's
a little bit different situation.
It is.
Then they're down 3-2 or 3-1 or 3-0 even.
Right. Yeah, I know. So Mark Lazarus, who's one of the primary beat writer for the Sun-Times for the Blackhawks, has a pretty fun Twitter feed from last night from the game. His quote, Blackhawks who came today to play, Crawford, Kruger, Kane, Rasmussen, Van Riemsdyk, didn't see a whole lot out of too many others. Had a whole bunch of angry Hawks fans, one that he quoted and said a thoughtful, reasonable take, obviously with sarcasm, was a gentleman named Brian, whose tweet was, I want them to lose 7-0 in game 4. F them, rip the C off Taves' chest.
Ooh.
So the worm is starting to turn.
That's like a double hot take horn.
It is a super hot take.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Apparently, Corey Crawford was a right rainbow of sunshine after the game. He was asked about the first goal, whether it was a fluky bounce. He said, I don't know, game's over. Was asked on the second goal whether or not he was interfered with and said, I don't know, game's over.
I'm just here because I don't want to be fined.
And by the way, let me tell you, ain't nobody getting fined for not showing up to talk to the media after a hockey game. So Corey Crawford chose to show up and not answer any questions.
Yeah, that's true. So where do you want to, you just want to stick with the Hawks for a minute? I go back to last week. We had Adam Minick here in studio, a self-confessed Blackhawks fan who writes for ProHockeyNews.com. He was pretty confident, and he was not so confident in the Blues. So I said, so what do you think? Second round, Blues, Blackhawks? He goes, Devin Dubnyk's pretty good. There was, without a doubt, the Blackhawks were advancing in his mind. We had Sam Felzon from TheCommittedIndian.com. His over-under on the Blackhawks advancing to the Western Conference Finals was
16 games?
16.5.
Yeah, 16.5, that's true.
Gosh, that's
you know,
quite the fall
there
of
is,
Earth.
There is quite, and it's hard to blame Blackhawks fans that much for at least having those, yeah, because they're used to it, and when they've played Nashville in the past, it has been the start of a long run. And look, if you're a Blues fan and you're looking at the layout of the Western Conference right now, you're probably thinking it does not look that intimidating, which is exactly what Blackhawks fans were thinking before the series started, that the Western Conference sort of laid out for the Hawks, and then all of the sudden, this is happening. Now, we should obviously, you know, That Doug Armstrong quote about the screwdriver and the brain has been jammed through everyone's mind for years now. There is probably still, I would call it, oh, let's say a 10% chance that the Blackhawks come back and beat the Predators in this series, and let's call it an 8% chance that the Wild come back and beat the Blues. I'm going to give the Blues an extra 2% just because, I don't know, I want to.
The Hawks and Wild are in the same position where there's game four on the road. If they get their first win, it guarantees the game five at home.
Game five at home, and then there's a good chance to get it back to game six. And at that point, you're on a roll. You've won two in a row. Momentum shifts, so on and so forth.
Who knows what happens?
So it's very easy to build a narrative where you can see those teams coming back. But
it's a pretty tall hill to climb. And the way that the Blackhawks and Wild have fallen behind. Basically, they haven't been able to score enough.
Right.
They've played decent defense.
And they've run into the two hottest goalies in the league so far. And that
was the other, that's the other thing I was going to say. It's all, you know, all about the goaltending. So it's kind of weird. I mean, this is you got the Capitals who are now going to be behind the eight ball. I mean, they're down 2-1. But they're, you know, there's another game in Toronto, so they could go down 3-1 pretty easily. You've got the Blackhawks, you got the Wild, you get, man.
Three series in the West are 3-0 right now.
Uh-huh.
There was not a sweep in the playoffs last year, and three series in the West are 3-0 right now.
Yeah, so that's an interesting development.
Yeah, the Lazarus Twitter feed, by the way, is pretty phenomenal as overtime develops, because he has a tweet that says, next goal wins the series, right? And then it's Fiala misses the net on a golden chance, and then it's Fiala post, and then it's, if the Predators don't win this game, Kevin Fiala will never sleep again. And then it's goal, Fiala, Preds win. So clearly Kevin Fiala was all over the ice in overtime. And it was just, you know, in retrospect, it's a lot of fun to go back and watch those tweets develop.
So it's interesting looking at time on ice for the Blackhawks. Duncan Keith, 32.5 minutes. Next highest defenseman, Hjalmarsson, 27. Brent Seabrook, 23. Trevor Van Riemsdyk actually had more time on ice than Brent Seabrook. He had 24. That's
That you know,
how many more years are left on that Seabrook contract? Like 4 or 5?
And
six,
people 10? Really, people really in Chicago have a problem with Quenneville for how much he loves Trevor Van Riemsdyk. TVR is the whipping boy up there for sure when it comes to ice time. But I mean, you know, he plays a solid, consistent game. He functionally is Joel Edmondson for the Blackhawks.
What defenseman for the Nashville Predators had the most time on ice?
Well, since you asked me that, it's not Subban, so I'm going to say Roman Josi.
Roman Josi.
Nope. Ekholm.
Ekholm did? Okay.
Yeah, he had 34, and then Subban had 33.5. Roman Josi had 31.
Yeah, I mean, Ekholm and Subban are partners, and that's their number one pairing. So
Ryan Ellis had 29. I mean... Weber, 11
Yannick.
Minutes.
Yeah. Yannick
and
Weber.
And then Irwin had 12.
Yep. Matt Irwin, former Shark, former waiver wire pick. I mean, like, you look at the Predators' defense, by the way. Obviously,
it's four guys.
P.K. Subban is an all-world player. Roman Josi is for sure an underrated player. But honestly, behind that, like, you know, Matthias Ekholm played 34.5 minutes last night. He's a fine defenseman, but not a name, certainly, that anyone thinks of.
No, so it's...
They're
leaning on four guys.
Yeah, that third pairing is literally waiver wire fodder, right? I mean, you can honestly make an argument that the Blues with Gunnarsson and Bortuzzo have a better third pairing than the Predators do with Weber and Irwin.
Yeah, so interesting how that played out.
Getting back to Brent Seabrook, you asked about his contract. This season was his first season on his new 8-year contract.
Wait, this year was the first?
This year, 2016-17 season, is the first year of his 8-year, $55 million contract. His cap hit is 6.875.
Maybe he'll enjoy Las Vegas.
How old is he?
He is 30 right now, according to this.
Yeah, I mean, that locks him up. That's one of those career deals, and... Look, the Blackhawks have so far gotten very lucky with those, because the Keith contract and the Marian Hossa contract were both signed under the previous CBA and were flexible enough that they didn't create any problems with Blackhawks. Duncan Keith does not make that much money, by the way. Keith's cap hit is only like 5.5 or something. It is fairly reasonable because he signed a forever long deal.
Like 12, 10 years or something.
When a $5.5 million hit was a lot, right? When, you know, before the explosion happened again.
Is Brent Seabrook the worst contract in the NHL?
No, not even close. No.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm positive.
Who's worse?
Milan Lucic is worse. And Andrew Ladd is worse, for sure. Lucic and Ladd are both making over $7.5 million. They're in their 30s. Those bodies are going to break down.
But they're not.
And they both have full no-movement clause. I don't know whether Seabrook does or not.
They're not 8 years, though.
They're 7 years.
Okay.
But David Backes' contract's got to be up there, wouldn't it?
And the Backes' contract is not great, but it's only five years. And I think he also doesn't have like full movement privileges. No, the Ladd and Lucic deals are brutal because those guys both have full no movements, and those teams have massive contract crunches coming up, right? Like, you're going to see Tavares is becoming a free agent. When you're talking about Edmonton, you're talking about they have to pay McDavid, and they have to pay Eberle, and they have to pay Dreisaitl, and they have to pay Klefbom, and they have to work all that around Lucic.
Wow. All right, so maybe we'll come back to that conversation in a couple years. So
our buddy
Keith still has 6 years on his contract, by the
way.
Yeah,
but he's good.
That's true.
He's good.
Our buddy Abe Froman, by the way, texting in to say he already has hotels booked in Nashville. Stop it. Stop doing that. Don't do that.
Hey, that's how jinxes start.
That's what I'm saying.
Don't tell the Sausage King of Chicago what to do.
I know that I do not outrank the Sausage King of Chicago. I'm just saying, like, let's not upset, you know. I will say this. I have been tempted, because I'm a planner, to look at the lay of the land for Nashville. I have a rough idea of what the calendar would look like.
When would that series start?
Well, so let me pull up the schedule for the Blues series, and I can answer that. Because the really interesting thing would be if
So say the teams that are winning win out.
Right. If these series,
ends this week,
are both sweeps.
Do they push up the timetable?
They cannot, because it's a TV broadcast thing, right? So they need all of the series to start at the same time, not only the West, but the East as well. Now, they might start Western series like but you're not going to have, you are almost certainly not going to have game one of a Western semifinal while there's still an Eastern quarterfinal going on.
Okay.
So game seven for the Blues and Wild is scheduled for Wednesday, April 26th.
Tomorrow.
My guess would be that game one of a semifinal would be that Friday night. Pending building availability, there it is. It would probably be that Friday night, April 28th.
And in this fantasy land that we're talking about that does not exist in the present day, the Blues would actually have home ice.
The Blues wouldn't. Yes. If the universe unfolds in such a way that the Blues play the Predators in the second round, the Blues would hold home ice advantage. Weird. So you'd be looking at probably a Friday night Sunday matinee in St. Louis, which I guess would be fun, and then you'd be looking at probably a Tuesday Thursday, or if they inserted the extra rest again, maybe a Wednesday Friday in Nashville.
So you're listening Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan KFNS, 590 AM 105.7 HD2, streaming live and inside SCL.com. And if you're just getting up and you want to hear the first couple minutes where we kind of sound giddy about a certain series that happened up in, actually down in Nashville last night, you can always get the audio pretty quickly after we're done with the first segment. I'm Brad, that's Jeff. Matt's over there. He's our, we'll call him the crack researcher this morning, because mm-hmm. he's pulling up knowledge for us.
I'm looking at contracts now.
Yeah, okay.
Bobby Ryan's got a pretty bad contract.
Bobby Ryan's deal is pretty brutal, especially considering the bad season he had.
How much time is left on his?
He's got 5 years left on his deal. It was a seven-year deal. 7.25 million cap hit,
and also with
26 points this past season.
Yeah, also with a full no move, by the way.
Yeah, that's not good.
But he did, I believe, score the game winning goal for Ottawa in overtime last night. So clearly
that pays for it.
Clearly, it pays. Yeah, pays the whole thing off right there.
The $7.25 million goal.
Yeah,
Jason Spezza's at $7.5 million.
Yeah, but he doesn't have that many years left.
Right? Yep, three left.
I mean, that at least is a deal that you can shake. And the difference there, and unless I'm very wrong, I think the Stars have all of their guys locked up too. Like, I think Sagan has a long term deal, and I think Ben's got a long term deal.
Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi.
Yeah, Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi definitely have long term deals, right? Because that's that is a part of it that you have to consider, is the way that it affects roster construction, especially when you talk about Lucic. I mean, that's a huge deal, because eventually Edmonton is probably going to have to lose a guy like Jordan Eberle because they have to pay Lucic.
Yeah, that's true. So let's turn our sights on the what did Wyshynski call the Boston Ottawa series? He says Ottawa is just boring.
Right.
He's like, this is probably the ugliest series going on. So let's see. Mike Hoffman scores for Ottawa. Derek Brassard scores for Ottawa. Mike Hoffman scores for Ottawa. And then Boston gets on the bull.
Yeah,
the
board. Ottawa hopped out to a 3-0 lead, and then Boston came roaring back. Old buddy David Backes with a big goal. Mm-hmm. Was the result of a terrible play by the Ottawa defenseman. A puck kind of they won a center ice draw. Puck immediately went back to the defenseman. And actually, I'm pretty sure. I mean, look at the timing. Yeah, it was right after the Noel Acciari goal.
Less than a minute later.
It was on the ensuing faceoff, I believe. The puck hops over the stick of the defenseman, and Backes picks it up and walks in on a breakaway.
So Boston sends it overtime on a David Pastrnak goal with about 6 minutes left, 6:09 left. And then 5:43 into overtime, Bobby Ryan scores his second of the playoffs from Kyle Turris and Mr. Carlson, one of my favorite defensemen in the league, who had a couple assists in that game. We want that Boston-Montreal series in the second round, right? Kind of disheartening.
So obviously, look, a Boston-Montreal series and then a Washington-Pittsburgh series would be
the wet dream of
Batman. Would be pretty great. Though again, you know, as we talked about yesterday, as much fun as it would be to see the Crosby versus Ovechkin thing, it would be hard to argue with the excitement that would come out of Toronto winning a playoff series.
Auston Matthews versus Sidney Crosby.
Matthews gets his first goal last night. Dart guy gets shown on the Jumbotron at the ACC like a half dozen times. Like they ran that well dry, man. they tapped it.
All right, since we're talking about that one. So Nicklas Backstrom, Alex Ovechkin scoring the first for Washington. Then Auston Matthews, like you said, got his first. Capitals had a 2-0 lead in the first 5 minutes of the game.
They did. They were on fire last night.
Then in the second period, Kuznetsov scores, and then Toronto comes back. Nazem Kadri, William Nylander, no goals in the third period. So 3-3 for about half the game almost.
And then at the end of regulation, former Blue Lars Eller ends up in the penalty box with about 13 seconds left in regulation, which sets up the overtime goal for the Maple Leafs.
Very quickly in, 1 minute, 37 seconds in, Tyler Bozak, who we had hoped might be a Blue at some point.
Tyler Bozak is on the list. Like if I made a list of 25 guys who I at one point was sure was going to be a Blue, Tyler Bozak would probably have been on that list.
Like top 10 probably?
Yeah, pretty. I mean, and honestly, he might still be on that list. Like it just everything about that fits to me. But
yeah, so... I think what I said before this series started was the Maple Leafs are so young, they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And getting put into this position together. Now, if it's, you know, if Auston Matthews is a bunch, you know, if him and maybe Marner are just the two young guys on kind of a middling, you know, a bunch of 25, 27-year-olds, then maybe they get a little overwhelmed. But when they look around the room and they have so many young guys,
I have to look at the exact roster they dressed last night. I believe Toronto dresses 9 rookies regularly.
Yeah, it's insane. So you look around the room and you're like, "Hey, we're all going through this together for the first time. You know, it's fun. It's exciting. It's a challenge. Can you believe we're doing this all together?" And then basically the narrative becomes, "Look, we're going to prove the world that we have what it takes, and this is the start of a dynasty," you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing is no one believes in us. You know, the Washington Capitals are such a heavy favorite. They're the best team in the league. You know, they made the biggest trade at the deadline. They have the best goaltender in the league. Well, let's shock the world. Yeah.
So Connor Carrick, not a rookie, but fewer than 60 NHL games played before this season. Zach Hyman is another guy who had very few games played before this season. Connor Brown, Marner, Zaitsev, Kasperi Kapanen, Nylander, Matthews, Martin Marincin, not a rookie again, but a young guy. So, I mean, those are all guys who are not, you know, those are the guys who are playing for Toronto.
Think about when that team goes on the road. They have to send like Freddie Anderson out to buy beer.
For, yeah, like half the team can't drink, right?
So they have to go. They have to go buy beer and sneak into the hotel.
And what's really interesting is you've got guys like Ben Smith and Eric Fair who are in the press box. I mean, then those are veteran guys who have been there before. Ben Smith has a ring with the Blackhawks. Eric Fair has been through. Eric Fair, I think, actually has a ring or two with the Penguins, and has been through a bunch of losing with the Capitals as well. So I mean, you know, those are guys who have been there before. Who at this point are. They're cheerleaders, right? They're doing the Steve Ott funny uncle thing where they just sort of hang out. Yeah. And, yeah.
So in that game, so it just went, you know, about 97 seconds into overtime. Maple Leafs got 28 shots on goal. Capitals only 26.
Which is crazy because that game certainly seemed like there was a lot of offense. The Caps had pretty close to a full 2 minute 5-on-3 in the second period on which they only generated one shot on goal.
Capitals had 24 blocks, so increase the shot attempts by that much. Maple Leafs only had 11. So maybe there was a lot of shots that went wide that didn't show up
the coverage from the Capitals side focused on that 5-on-3 that they missed on in the second period, and on there being a distinct lack of urgency perhaps on that power play setup. And you know, I was watching that game, I watched that setup. That five man unit on that 5-on-3 was Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, Shattenkirk, and Justin Williams. That's absurd. That is a ridiculous 5-on-3 unit, and they got one shot because they weren't hustling, they weren't urgent, they weren't locked in.
I remember the day after the Shattenkirk trade to Washington, and we talked to a couple different people. I think one question that was put in the interesting category was, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they figure out how to distribute the offense. And that, you know, you've got so many guys who can shoot the puck and shoot the puck well. Who's gonna take it upon themselves to be, okay, I'm going to take the shot. Or is it going to be, I'm going to defer to you. Here, you take the shot. Maybe you have a little bit better chance. We're going to pass the puck maybe a little too much. And maybe that's the result. I don't know.
There can be
situations where you need someone to step up and say, I'm going to be greedy and I'm going to take all the shots.
And the one thing they have going for them is that Alex Ovechkin is not shy about being the guy who will be greedy to step up and take all of the shots.
But let's scroll down to see how many shots.
And one thing
he had five. He had five.
And one thing that you saw last night, especially on that 5-on-3 as I was watching it, was that Shattenkirk still has not yet totally figured out how to get that puck to Ovechkin, where he likes to pass, when he should and shouldn't elevate it. That's, you know, they're still working on that. Whereas with a guy like Niskanen, Ovechkin has, you know, years of working with that guy to figure out exactly where those passes should go. Right? I mean, a guy like Backstrom, they've been glued together for 10 years at this point. But Shattenkirk, even as skilled as he is, still has to figure out exactly how to gel with that team. And things like that, like when to elevate the pass or not, may seem like small things. But for a guy like Ovechkin, who relies so much on his release and the velocity behind his shot, those things add up in a hurry.
Okay, this is what I'm talking about. Our friend TJ Oshie, Tej, he had 3 minutes and 15 seconds of power play time. He had one shot on net.
Because that's not his role on that Capitals power play. He runs that half wall and distributes. He and Backstrom distribute from either side of the ice. Williams takes the net front, and everything runs around getting Ovechkin the shot from the dot. That's it. That's the entire goal of power play.
No other player had more than 3 minutes on the power play, though. So, I mean, he had a significant more time on the power play than every other player on the team.
Not even Backstrom? I mean, I would assume that Backstrom would be on the ice a substantial amount of time along with Ovechkin.
228 versus 315.
Oh, wow. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I mean,
and Backstrom had two shots on goal.
That power play setup is 100% designed to create distracting motion away from the puck to get the penalty kill to drift so Ovechkin has a clean shot of the net from the dot. That's it. That's the entire purpose of the power play.
Here, look, this is how Toronto funnels it. Austin Matthews, six shots on goal. Tyler Bozak, five. Much more of a focus. You know, no one else had more than two other than, is that Mike Riley, Matt Riley?
Morgan Riley.
I was in the ballpark. He had three. But that's it. So it's, I mean, they have a little bit more of a focus, I think. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how the Capitals respond next game at Air Canada Center. Is that tomorrow night, I assume?
I assume so, yeah, unless they... I think, of course, the Blues and Wild have the only real goofy schedule.
Where they've got two games... Blah, blah, blah. I wanted to say days and games at the same time.
They have two dames.
Two dames.
Some of them probably do.
Yeah, well...
They're probably...
Probably. Yeah. Rumor has it.
That's okay. That's allowed. Doesn't affect me none.
All right. Fair enough. So, I don't know. What do we want to talk about Calgary and Anaheim here?
We want to feel bad for Brian Elliott. I mean, you know, I've seen people. I saw, and I think it was on Brian Lawton's Twitter feed this morning. He had quoted somebody. So let me talk about Brian Lawton for a second as I go to search for Brian Lawton in Twitter and go ahead and chew up some air time.
Sure. The Flames got out to a 4-1 lead. They scored three power play goals. Sean Monahan, Christopher Stieg, Sam Bennett, Michael Stone snuck one in there for Anaheim in between. So it was 3-1 in the second period. Then Shea Theodore came in, and then two goals in the third period for the Ducks. Nate Thompson and another one for Shea Theodore.
He had a Hattie?
He had two goals.
Okay.
And then the winner was Corey Perry. 1.5 minutes, just 90 seconds in overtime.
So Mark Spector, Sportsnet columnist, and who's based in Edmonton, but is well known as kind of a name, I guess, in the industry up there, went in on Brian Elliott on Twitter last night. He's quote, Elliott in a contract year gave Flames 2/3 of a season and a below average game 3. Are you re-signing him?
That's an interesting question.
That is an interesting question. And then Kristen Odland, who is a reporter up there, has a quote from Brian Elliott that says, it's not an easy one. I didn't feel I played very well. I let the team down a little bit. Spector quotes that and says, at least it was only the most important game of the year.
Oh, man. Well, how many games has it been that Calgary has not lost or has not won in Anaheim? Like 26 straight games?
The year escapes me, but it's been...
7 years, I think?
No, longer than that. I want to say it's been like since 1999 or something, since Calgary has won a game in Anaheim.
That's depressing. So you basically had to hold serve at home to have any chance.
Right.
And they could not. So, Brian Elliott makes 21 saves on 26 shots.
Yeah, the quote from Mark Giordano last night, the captain of the Flames, was, that's the toughest loss I've been around in this organization. We better learn a lot from that. I mean, that can't happen.
His save percentage... a sparkling 81.5.
Not great.
Not great.
Text from the 618 texting in to say that we should get Sam from Chicago back on this week to break down the Hawks' vacation plans and golf games.
I will reach out to him today.
That could be amusing. And then we had a text from the 217 that says, speaking for 98% of NHL fans, this is from our buddy JP, speaking for 98% of NHL fans, we're giddy with you on the Hawks' loss. Vegas is loving this. Odds on the favorite to potential sweep. Probably not a lot of public action, I'm guessing, on the old Nashville Predators before the series started.
No.
Matt, what you got?
Yeah, it is 29 straight wins for Anaheim at home against Calgary.
Yeah.
29.
That's brutal.
And they play in the same division.
And, you know, it's not like the pond has some overwhelming home ice advantage. Like, the rink is fine. It is nice, and it's in the bottom quadrant of the ones that I've been to in the league.
And it's never totally full.
No, it is, you know, it's a...
Rarely is it full.
Yeah, it's a clean concrete box, but a concrete box all the same.
So our friend Brian Elliott, he is 32 years old. His season this year, so he finished with a record of 26-18, 3 overtime or shootout losses. His goals against average for the year, 2.55. Save percentage, 91.0. So
he was decidedly average.
Jake Allen was 91.5, I know that. And I think Jake Allen's goals against was like 2.4.
Those stats are pretty close to what Allen's were.
Playoffs, 3 games, 0-3. Goals against, 3.67. Save percentage, 88.7.
He hasn't had a great playoff season. That's, you know, and you know, it's only been 3 games, so you have the small sample size, but nothing about Brian Elliott, who is 32, suggests that he's a guy who you're really going to want to hitch your wagon to. And, you know, I know we always, it is easy to take random players and just dump them on Vegas. Like, yeah, that makes sense. Go to Vegas. but, you know, in constructing that roster, if you are the Vegas Golden Knights and you end up with a guy like Philip Grubauer, for example, a guy who is 24, 25, but hasn't really carried a full load to be your goalie, Brian Elliott makes a lot of sense as a 35-game, 40-game backup.
Well, and it's a guy you could sign for a two-year.
Right.
Two or three year contract, get him to about age 35.
1 or 2 year even at this point, probably, right? I mean, he hasn't had a great... And the thing is, look, when he was here, there was all this conversation about how Brian Elliott came in with certain expectations. and those expectations never changed, and so he never really got his shot or whatever.
I always called it organizational memory because they knew,
right.
They knew he came on a two-way contract making the league minimum.
But the thing is, the entire league, I think, has that opinion of Brian Elliott, right? It's not like others around the league were looking at Brian Elliott and going, what are the Blues doing? This is the best goaltending they've had in 10 years. You know, hold on to this guy. I think when they dumped him, people went, yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, there's
they got a second round pick. That's great.
Right. And so I don't think that he is going to have the kind of opportunity where he's going to sign, you know, a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal at $4 or $5 million as a free agent. He's looking at 1 or 2 years at $2.5 or $3 million, maybe. I mean, that's the reality for Brian Elliott, who, number one, was not that good this season. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't that good. And number two, he started off horrible. Is not getting younger, right?
The thing I think in St. Louis that we feel about Brian Elliott, I mean, obviously we have the soft spot for his performance in the playoffs, but I think it's even more, you know, we talk mostly about performance on the ice. We don't really talk much on this show about guys off the ice, their personality, you know, what kind of human being they are.
Right.
And during the time that Brian Elliott was here, he and his wife showed that they are, from all accounts, public persona, really nice people. And, you know, when he, the thing that I always come back to in my mind, I see the pictures where, you know, he didn't get picked for the All-Star game and he's on a beach somewhere and he takes a selfie with him and his wife on the beach. And then all of a sudden he gets called to come to the All-Star game. And then he kind of recreates that selfie with Vladimir Tarasenko coming in to shoot on goal.
Right.
And I mean, it's those little things. It's like, well, that's really cool. And, you know, the whole nickname story, you know, where it was a family friend who was a championship moose caller, who died while he was still at University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And he decided to pay tribute to him with the moose on the back of the helmet. And that became his nickname. I mean, that's a heartwarming story.
It's really easy to like Brian Elliott. It's right. Just that, you know, he had 1 year in 10-11 where he was absolutely brutal. I mean, just a horrible year for a goaltender.
When he went from Ottawa to Colorado.
Yeah, where he put up, over the course of the year between those two teams, an .893 save percentage and a .334 goals against. And from that...
Over how many games?
That was over 50 games, because that was Ottawa and Colorado combined. So that was not a small sample size. And he was brutal that year, and that was it, right? I mean, that was... The opinion of Brian Elliott got formulated around the league in that year. And so everything else he's done since then has been this big shock.
And that's when he signed a league minimum contract. Literally anybody else could have paid him $50,000 more than the Blues did, and he would have gone there.
Right. And I believe he came in on a two-way deal too.
Yep.
Like, if he had not made the Blues, he was going to get paid $100,000 to play for the Rivermen at that point.
He wasn't going to get an AHL salary to go down to the AHL.
Yeah, and so...
Well, and before he really turned his career around, it was, 2 years later, they actually sent him on a quote-unquote conditioning stint
right.
to Peoria at the time. And when he got back, he was a different goaltender from that point on in St. Louis.
You know, and so out of all of that, that's where that opinion of Brian Elliott forms, and he's not going to get some giant deal. He's going to be somebody's backup next season.
Oh, no, he's not going to get a giant deal. But he could be the starting goaltender for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. I'm sorry, the Vegas Golden Knights.
Right, no loss.
Oh, they'll have losses.
They will have plenty of losses.
They'll have plenty of losses, just not in front of their name.
I don't. Why? Why do they do that?
I don't know.
What's up, Matt?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. I thought you
your
had
eyes,
found a thing.
No, I thought something, and then I was like, no, that doesn't fit at all. So
your eyes just met across the table.
These eyes. It happens a lot.
Yeah. So you're listening to Game Time AM here on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2, InsideSTL.com. You can stream, you can podcast. We've been getting a lot of tweets lately from folks saying, hey, love the show. I podcast a lot. I've totally caught up. I hate it when you're not on Fridays. And when someone says that they don't like that we're not on the air, like they would prefer us to be on the air, is amazing. And we got several people who listened to us all 4 hours yesterday. 2 hours here on Game Time AM, and then 2 hours filling in for Frank Cusimano in the middle of the morning from 10 to 12. So we had some good stuff. Who did we have on?
We had Kevin Faulness yesterday.
And when he came on, so he's the radio guy for the Minnesota Wild. He does intermission, pregame, postgame, that kind of stuff. He doesn't do play-by-play or color, but you know, he's still part of the broadcast team with intermission work type stuff.
I would say he's like their Chris Raby. But but better because Radio Wars.
Radio Wars.
Chris Raby, the
hashtag Radio Wars.
Chris Raby for sure does not know either of our names, by the way. Like 100%.
No.
Oh, knows. Yours he does. Okay.
Yeah. He actually had offered for me to be on Sports Open Line a couple times.
Ooh.
I appeared on Sports Open Line an exact number of zero.
Okay. So you could say
he was leading me on.
So you could say that he slighted you and the radio war continues.
He may have been overruled. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe the Blues. No, the Blues didn't say that.
it wasn't me.
No. So we had the radio wild radio guy on yesterday, and he was pretty salty when he joined us yesterday.
But not salty at the Blues, right?
No. Right. He was definitely fired up, and I think it's probably the overwhelming frustration, despair, consternation of Wild fans in Minnesota. You know, and he made the point perfectly. He said the Wild, this is statistically speaking, their best season in franchise history. The most wins, the most points, the best team the Minnesota Wild have ever had, and they're down 0-3.
This feels, for Wild fans, and it was different because the Blues won the President's Trophy, but it's a similar feeling to the series against the Sharks.
At least that one went seven.
That one at least went seven, but where you're playing a team that is, by and large, you know, feels like they're inferior, feels like you're controlling the series, and you just can't get there.
You know, I think one thing we talked about before the series, if you looked at the stats of the Wild, I made a point several times to say, look, they are very deep in scoring. They had the five guys with more than 50 points, which was most in the league. They had 12 guys who scored in double digits in goals. But if you look up and down that roster, the Minnesota Wild, you know, Eric Staal shocked the world by how well he played this year.
Right.
You could probably make the argument, and we didn't. We should have, maybe. I thought about it, asking the question, can he replicate that in the playoffs after a full season? A little bit older guy, a lot of miles on the legs, came into the league as a teenager. I don't think I've really noticed him in this playoff series. Have you?
No, and that part of that is because the Blues have played such good defense as a team that you haven't really noticed anyone on the Wild offensively. Like, Zach Parise has, you know, two goals for them, but there's nothing really that you're seeing there that's that really is inspiring a lot of confidence out of them.
So Kevin Faulness with the Wild Radio yesterday, he basically said, look, fans want progress. They want him to get over the hump. They want to see playoff performance. And what is the farthest the Wild ever? They made one Western Conference final.
They've been to the conference final. They were in the conference finals in 2003. When the Anaheim Ducks ended up losing to the Devils in the finals.
13 years ago.
The year that Paul Kariya got murdered by Scott Stevens.
Man. One of those guys is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And is the assistant coach on this team. That
the
we're
other,
talking about.
I think, maybe will be. I think Paul Kariya is a Hall of Famer, eventually.
Longevity speaking.
I mean, he played 1,000 games in the league. He had, I think, almost exactly like 1,000 games and 1,000 points.
Yeah, but those last 150 was not the same.
He had 989 games played and 989 points.
I was
going to
say, I knew it was something weird like that. Yeah, 402 goals. He's got a. As I say, he's got a ring. I lie because he was not on that Anaheim team that won in 2007.
No,
but I think Paul Kariya is a Hall of Famer. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a topic for another day. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan. I say it too fast sometimes. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt's over there locking gazes with each other.
I think today you're like, I'm a little tired. I know that you're not a Smoky Mac pot kind of guy. But like you do, you got a lot of Plowsy vibe going on today. Like you were very like laid back in the chair, just like.
I didn't have my feet up on the desk like some other hosts around here.
But if you're the boss, you can put your feet wherever you damn well please.
The minority boss. It's early. It's early. I don't know. What else do we need to talk about from the four games last night?
There is a text from the 618 asking about the goaltender interference in the Chicago-Nashville game. On the tying goal, on the Forsberg goal, there was a little bit of static in front of the net, and Corey Crawford lost his mind a little bit and was begging for a call.
Shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, you watch that replay, and I think it was Arvidsson, gets close and maybe makes contact, but he certainly does not alter Crawford's positioning. Like, and it wasn't even substantial enough for Crawford to decide to flop on the contact. It was just enough for him to complain afterward.
Was it enough for Arvidsson to flop on the contract?
It was not. No one, shockingly, Arvidsson collides with Crawford and nobody flops.
Yeah, either party wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they could just fall down flailing their arms.
Right.
I was it. I don't know. It was four overtime games, but then you've got two of them are kind of late. I think Calgary
Anaheim didn't start until I think like 9:30 St. Louis time. I mean that game,
which is like 9:40, 9:45.
Yeah, that game started super late. And then I mean the Nashville Chicago game did not even complete one overtime and finished after midnight local time.
Yeah, because they started at 8:30.
Right. 8:48 is when the puck went down.
8:48
is when the puck went down in that game.
That's all. Just call that 9:00.
Yeah, I mean that's look. I understand. The TV scheduling aspect of this, I really do. That's asinine. Like that's
it's a double edged sword. It's a double edged sword because you can make the claim that, look, they want to make sure that fans can watch all the games, but it's also so that they can have that many more commercials and eyeballs on commercials, you know, and not competing with commercials.
I was podcasting yesterday's TMA on the way in here because I didn't listen yesterday because I was hanging around the studio outside the glass. And I heard them talking about the schedule and the weird breaks for the Blues. And I think it was Doug mentioned that, you know, you have the choice between the extra off days or, you know, getting reasonable start times, but not really because the Blues are playing an 8:48 game tomorrow night as well. You know, and that because my initial reaction was, oh, that makes sense, but no, because that's an 8:48 game tomorrow for the Blues too. And by the way, if the Blues end up playing the Predators in the second round, I guarantee you
those games are going to start.
Those games are all going to. I mean, the Blues and the Predators are going to get dinged with the worst start times for sure.
NBC will push it off on like the home shopping,
which
network.
Drives me batty, by the way, because when you look at the list of top ratings for NHL broadcast and NBC throughout the season, the St. Louis market is consistently in the top five. When it comes to TV ratings, and yet NBC doesn't care.
Well, is it the literal number of eyeballs they believe watching, or is it the percentage of eyeballs watching TV in St. Louis?
I guess maybe it's percentage. So in that case, you know, I get it. It's a smaller market, but it's a top 20 market. Like, you know, we're not Omaha, right? I mean, there's no consideration at all. And by the way, there have only been look. This is my St. Louis inferiority complex bubbling and it's bursting out at this point. There are only three teams in the NHL who have had a playoff streak as long or longer than the Blues. So at what point do the Blues get respect as a consistent presence in the NHL playoffs? At what point does the St. Louis market get respect as a hockey-supporting market and give us a damn 7 o'clock game, right? Like, start someone else later. You know, that's...
Well, if it's you know, if you look who advances, it's not like there's going to be any other Central Division teams or Central time zone teams.
Again, if the Blues and the Predators would be the only two Central time zone teams that would have, because by the way the wild card brackets broke out this year, the Western Conference or the Pacific Division wild card will play the winner of the division series from the Pacific. So all like the time zones are clearly separated.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Are we getting ahead of ourselves? Matt, are we making you nervous talking about this 3-0 lead for the Nashville Predators?
No, not at all.
No? You're comfortable with it?
I'm good with it.
What are they... NCAA tournament games, Seth, what's his face? He says he's...
Seth Wickersham?
No.
I don't know. Seth Wojciechowski?
Seth from Sports Illustrated.
I don't know.
He's a college basketball.
It's not Seth Wickersham?
No. He gets the Sharpie out, and he's going to write on his bracket in Sharpie that the game is over. So are we going to write in Sharpie? Seth Davis.
Okay.
Cool. Are we going to get our Sharpie out and write down the series is over?
I'm not getting any Sharpies out.
I did last night.
I have a belief still in the gods of hockey that is very stupid, but I do believe it.
It's interesting that...
Seth Wickersham, by the way, is an ESPN guy.
Yeah.
But at least it's a real person.
It is a real person. I thought it might be some sort of like Hobbit name or something.
Yeah, a little bit.
It kind of sounds like one.
I thought it was somebody off of Horton Hears a Who, to be honest with you.
it's a Doctor Who sounding name, sure. He may have made it up after reading a Dr. Seuss book. You never know. You know, there's the emergence of these bracket challenges, kind of NCAA-style bracket challenges with hockey playoffs. We had several friends, you know, with websites and different groups saying, hey, do the bracket challenge. We just did the NCAA one. I don't know. I I know a lot about hockey, but I don't think I can fairly say I'm going to give a good prognostication about who's going to win Anaheim,
I mean,
Calgary.
I could do a hell of a lot better than that than I could do with who's going to win, I don't even, UNLV and Moorhead State. What are we talking about here?
I probably finished in the bottom third of our NCAA bracket pool. I picked Duke.
I had one of the lowest percentages, but I got North Carolina, so I get bumped up by artificially by point. I would have done way better in a hockey bracket challenge, though I did fill one out, and as I go back through it in my head, I don't know that I'm necessarily crushing it. Though I did have, I feel like I had Blackhawks, Blues, Oilers, Ducks, so that's not so bad.
No. At least as the playoff series have unfolded so far.
Right.
How long has that been a thing? Hockey bracket.
In the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think that's been a thing as soon as someone realized that they could develop software and sell it and that somebody decided they could gamble on it.
Okay, well, this is really the first season I've ever really, heard a whole lot about it.
It has been kind of a big deal. Like, this year, people have been really into it more than they have been in the past.
Well, and it really wasn't possible because at one point, remember they used to reseed after the first round?
Right.
Where it was, okay, it doesn't matter where you, it matters where you finished in that the top seed was still going to play the bottom seed no matter how the first round played out.
Yeah, that's a good point because, now you can actually set the bracket rather than having to randomly reshuffle it all of the time.
Yeah, that wasn't going to work. That doesn't, if you're randomly playing the second round matchups, right. There's no way to.
And that's, and that's a thing that it's funny that we haven't even really considered is the difference in what that would have looked like. Like it's hard to remember those days because the Blues did not have a lot of success under with the last handful of years of that prior playoff system. And so it's easy for that to jump out of your memory real quick. And the Blues right now could be sitting looking at what, three potential second round opponents, five or what? I mean, right? Like the Blues, if they advance, would have more points than Nashville and Edmonton, but fewer points than Anaheim. So I guess they probably don't end up playing Nashville anyway. Again, if. Yeah.
You got to qualify that for sure. You're listening to Game Time AM here on 5-9 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2. We haven't gotten any phone calls. Everybody's sleeping in. They stayed up too late to watch the
overtime game. They were up with you, apparently, partying and getting the...
Either that or someone muted the ringer again, and I haven't been staring at the phone.
Yeah, so, hey, the phone number is 855-282-8255. Or join the conversation on the text inbox, or you can tweet at us. I have the Game Time Twitter open right in front of me. A few people are talking about how early it is this morning, but they say, at least we get to listen to Game Time AM in the 5 o'clock hour. So thank you for listening, and I think they come back and... Yeah, there we go. They come back and podcast because they're going into work.
Yeah. Man,
going into work at before 6 o'clock.
That's an early morning. Hey, are we gonna have Friends of the Feather here in the second hour today?
We don't have anybody lined up.
Okay.
It got a little busy last night on the homestead.
That happens.
Yeah. So we'll have some guests tomorrow. I've got a couple possibles. We'll start emailing some people this morning and saying, hey, wake up early tomorrow because the Blues don't play again tonight, so we need something to talk about.
And we'll sort those out, and we will also have Travis Hughes from SB Nation will be on this week as well.
Are we sure?
We're pretty sure. Like I talked to Travis yesterday. I guess last time he thought we were calling him, and then he was going to call us. And I think we did call him. I don't know.
Emailing him saying, hey, are you going to be on?
He was very gracious and apologetic, and said he will be sure to work it out this week. So we'll have Travis this week for sure.
Travis is the
editor in chief.
He's a vice president.
Yeah,
at Vox Media.
Let's do it for the outro. Sorry. Matt and I are doing a little bit of business over here.
Show prep.
Show
prep during the show.
Show prep for the immediacy during the show. The Vox office in DC, let me tell you, pretty fun place.
So
any office that has a Thursday happy hour is an office I like to be in.
We'll explain that real quick. So our website, stlewisgametime.com, stlewisgametime.com, is part of the SB Nation. The SB stands for sports blog, but they don't like to say sports blog because blog has some sort of connotation now.
Yeah, no.
But they're blogs. They're blogs, and they're sports blogs, so that's SB Nation. So SB Nation was started by one dude, Papa Blez. He ran the Oakland A's blog. I forget what the exact title is. And he got some friends that had other baseball websites, and he said, let's make a community of baseball blogs, and we can kind of share traffic, and we can share stories and talk to each other and yada yada. And that turned into a network of like, what? It's over 250 sites now.
319.
Yeah, see? And it's like any team you can imagine, college teams, divisions, leagues. I mean, the most popular websites in the network are for fighting, like MMA and boxing. Mm-hmm. The MMA guys do insane millions and millions of hits. It's crazy. So we're part of that. The Game Time website is part of that. And so Travis is the NHL hockey league manager. So all of the websites that are talking about hockey kind of report to him. We derisively call him a middle manager. So, you know, he tells us things to do and we sometimes do them. I don't run the website. I don't really write for the website too often. In the early days of Game Time, man, we were really good about posting the audio. And then I really got in the habit of trying to take a little nap after the show. And so that really cut into the time of posting stuff on the website. So we need to get back to that maybe here later this week.
Maybe we'll sort that out.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Thursday, we're going to be at Tim Hortons in Lafayette Square, Lafayette Avenue. And maybe we'll make a triumphant return to the website with that one. So to make sure we get a lot of exposure for our friends at Tim Hortons who are giving us a chance to broadcast live and talk about the great food and coffee at Tim Hortons on Thursday. We'll be talking about that more in the next hour. So it's kind of weird that, you know, we're pretty fiercely independent. You know, we have the Game Time paper that we sell outside Blues Games. We use hockey-friendly language, which might not be family-friendly language.
There's a lot of the F word.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. A moderate amount.
There's
a sprinkling.
There's an amount of F words. There's an ebb and flow. When the Blues are playing pretty well and we're in the playoffs and we're writing about the playoffs,
okay,
there might be a few less.
This is terrible timing because we have to get into a break very quickly. Have you found yourself using ebb and flow a lot more lately? Because last night as I was writing my story for Wednesday's story, my story for Wednesday, I should say, I think I used ebb and flow like four times. So when you're editing, by the way, keep an eye out for that because I feel like ebb and flow is like bled into my language. I don't know where the hell it came from.
Drunk girl last night, I guess she was working on something and then Tim Peel popped up on Twitter. Because
Tim Peel, not popular last night.
Which game was he working? The Boston game?
Yeah.
And he called a penalty he called the penalty in overtime.
Yes.
And it was an overtime winner for Ottawa.
Right after a couple calls were missed, I think.
Yeah. And it was a roughing call.
We should do this, by the way, in the next hour because we need to go to break.
I know. All right, start playing the music. What music we got, Matt Davis?
Oh.
All right, this is a historic moment in the ninth week of Game Time AM. This is the first country music song we've played.
Here's
on the
thing.
Show.
Enjoy this song now because, knock on wood, in a week we're going to hate this damn song.
This is the Nashville Predators goal song, what they play after the Predators score in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. So a little bit of rubbing salt in the wound for our friends up north. Those friends up north.
We'll shake the salt out. We'll rub it later.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Come back after 6 o'clock for the second hour of Game Time AM here on 590 Fan Camp in St. Louis.